thinking CEOs have always understood that technology and culture are inextricably linked. Now, openness has become central to the way we work, particularly seen in large organizations. However, introducing new technologies and ideas into a large organization can be challenging. Welcome to Africa Business Radio. I am Chukwunonso Modi. Join me to talk about open organization, its benefits and challenges as well, is John Harvey, Regional GM at Red Hat Sub-Saharan Africa. Welcome, Dion. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Alonso, and hi to all of your listeners.
All right. Now, let's go right into it. First of all, just to give our listeners, a clear understanding, what exactly is an open organization and how can you compare it to a traditional company?
It's a great question. So, if you'll allow me, before we talk about what an open organization is, let's take a moment to just understand perhaps what traditional organizations look like today. Okay. And how these are different. You know, when you opened the conversation, you talked about large organizations needing to do new things, etc. A lot of the ways in which companies work today actually dates back, believe it or not, to the Industrial Revolution. In the early part of the 1900s, the world was really just starting to get industrialized. We saw suddenly for the first time big companies forming, lots of new factories, etc. And the world actually wasn't geared to know how to work in these ways yet. And so there was a lot of thinking at the time in the early 1900s about what are efficient company structures, company philosophies. But of course, back then, some of the decisions that were made are still being felt today in how companies run. And you'll probably recognize some of these things, right? Some of the things that became mainstream philosophy in those early days of the Industrial Revolution talked about organizations needing clear hierarchies, for example. Employees must have clear roles so they can be focused, you know, standardization of all processes, precise measurements, and dedication to tasks. There was no deviate or try to think too much. You've got a specific task to do. Please try and stick to that. And in fact, often in those days, there wasn't even contact between managers and employees. The managers were sitting in a fancy office somewhere. The employees were often factory workers and they were sitting down in the plant. And so the early philosophies that have become today's way of corporate structuring were actually defined 100 years ago, quite frankly.
Wow.
And so when you think about it, you still see some of those things in modern corporations today where it's about hierarchy. You do what your manager tells you to do. Try not to think too much, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
And the open organization is trying to turn that on its head, quite frankly. And I think there are some really important reasons why, but we'll come to the reasons why. But let me just talk a little bit about the difference, for example. So we talked about the conventional organization and how old the thinking is around that. And some of the attributes around this top-down way of thinking is, first of all, command and control, right? Clear leadership, clear management, tiering, command and control. I will give the instructions as the manager or the CEO, whatever, and you will do. Often planning was centralized, and organizations like this are very hierarchical in their thinking. Titles mean a lot, for example. I'm the manager, you're the worker, let's not confuse the two kind of thing. Rank is important, and the way you generally advance in organizations like this is through promotion and pay, right? So that's the conventional organization. Now, as I said, an open organization tries to turn this on its head completely. In an open organization, instead of it being top-down in thinking, we like to think of it in Red Hat as bottom-up. So that, for example, changes my role as the leader. Instead of me being in a command and control type role, rather my job in an open organization is to set the direction in a clear way and change the way it feels to be in the organization. So leadership is a key element of this. Instead of things getting done based on title and rank and hierarchy and clear instruction, An open organization seeks to have a meritocracy-based way of deciding what needs to happen. The best idea must win is the kind of the concept behind meritocracy, right? The best idea should win. So I, as the leader, don't necessarily have to come up with that idea. I don't necessarily have to be the one who knows all. Rather, I should create an environment where all of the people in the organization feel free to contribute that best idea. And if it's better than mine, then it should win, right? That should be the way we should work. Mm. And of course, how do you motivate and inspire in an organization like this? It's less about promotion, pay, and certainly those things are important, right? Money is always important. But if you can have people understand their purpose and you can have them engage with passion and be involved, then you're talking about a different dynamic. So these are some of the things that an open organization aspires to. And we at Red Hat, by the way, we operate our business as an open organization, and we aspire to do so in the ways that I've just talked about now.
All right. Now, I like that you took us back in time, so we know that this is not something that just started. It has been building up till this moment. Now, I would like to know why open organization matters now more than ever. Now, let's paint a scenario where, you know, as much as we have open organizations now, there's still some companies that still prefer the traditional way of doing things. Now, if I use an African concept, for example, now, your boss is your boss. So how do I put it? There's this title. People go through with titles. So, you are the leader and it's what he says that must be done. So for a company like that, that you need to talk to, okay, open organization is a real key factor in growing. How do you tell them how it matters now, especially at this point that we are in?
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that, because culture definitely matters. And you're right, African culture, there are elements of that, but I've worked for American companies for most of my life, and I can tell you that the same way of thinking still manifests itself in most American corporate cultural organizations that I've worked in. Okay. You know, the boss is the boss and the workers are the workers, and, you know, try not to get confused, yes, as to where you're supposed to be, kind exactly of thing, you know. So, but the common denominator between what you spoke of and my experiences in American corporations is the same thing. By and large, culture is the key element here. But let's maybe for a moment just touch on why. The first thing I guess I would say is open organizations may not be for you as a company, if you're listening. That's probably the first thing to think about is it really for you? But let's talk about why it could be for you. We talked about old ways of thinking, and just because something worked for the last 100 years, that doesn't mean we shouldn't change it. Mm-hmm. We also see that organizations are more global, more complex. And I know from personal experience how often we would get a corporate message coming down from, let's say, New York or whatever, and the strategy is lost in translation because people don't understand the why. And when you don't understand the why, you execute on rote, as they were. I'll just do what I'm told, even if it might not work here in Johannesburg or in Lagos or in Nairobi. I just do it because I was told. If it happens to not have the right local context, who cares? I was told what to do. But maybe the more important reason for change is the opportunity within it. Today, organizations are looking for ways to innovate. There's certainly enough competition in the world, you know, through all the growth of global organizations, etc. So if we're going to innovate, we've got to accept that maybe we need to think differently as well. So innovation is a key element of why you might want to consider using open organizational practices. And then I think the other thing that we've all lived through in the last, you know, 2 years was COVID. COVID forced mm-hmm. us to rethink how we work. You know, I spent 2 years having to manage a team remotely from my home. I'm sitting in my home office now. Mm-hmm. And for 2 years, we didn't have the opportunity to meet with each other in person. if ever there was a test for whether or not people can function autonomously and knew what to do, COVID forced us, right?
Yes.
If I had a team of 100 people waking up every morning, not knowing what to do next and having to wait for instruction, we would have died under COVID, right? Because you simply can't work like that. So I think COVID has forced us to rethink a little bit. Is there a better way to work? Maybe there is a better way to work. And that's, I think, what the open organization is able to differentiate on. So there are some really good practical reasons why you may consider wanting to be an open organization.
Mm. True. Okay, let's talk about challenges now. I know we've spoken about it from the cultural level. Let's also look at it from the technical. So what are the challenges of opening an organization from a technical level?
So that's a great question, because quite often when people look at change within an organization, they focus on, I won't say the wrong things, but they hone in on things like technology or the technicalities of it. And we have done a survey with Harvard Business Review to understand in depth the dynamics around open organizations. And by the way, if you want to read a little bit more about this, Red Hat CEO, previous CEO Jim Whitehurst wrote a book on the open organization called The Open Organization. Okay. And in there, he talks about some of the feedback and some of the insights from the Harvard Business Review that reveal that in any organizational change like this, it's more than half of the impacting factors are actually cultural. Technology, 30%, process change, a certain percent as well. The bulk of the work is actually people and culture.
Okay.
Technology plays an important part, because certainly your teams need to have the right tools to be able to do their job. And when I say tools, it can be collaboration tools. Email is a tool, but let's face it, email is hardly these days a tool for effective collaboration. I don't know about your email inbox, but if you see mine, I can tell you it's definitely not. So there are cleverer ways of collaborating with clever tools. And for organizations to be able to change, they also need to rethink processes internally. But none of those two are going to in itself have the impact required. Culture is absolutely key. And crazily enough, but maybe not surprisingly, the same Harvard Business Review was part to change. It's easy. You can throw money at technology. You can enforce a process change. But changing people is not as easy. That's the hard part.
True. I totally agree that changing people are not as easy, especially their mindset. Imagine people from different cultures, different backgrounds coming together. So you have to, it takes a lot of time and energy as well. Now,
absolutely, time is key.
Yes. Now, there is a saying, open organizations are meritocracies, not democracies. So I'd like you to explain for them what that means for our listeners.
Thank you. So open organizations, as mentioned, try to turn that model on its head, right? So instead of being command and control, you move to an open organization where the leader sets the context for people. And sometimes there's a misunderstanding that means that suddenly the organization is a giant democracy and everybody can vote on whatever they want to do, right? And if everybody votes, then that's what we're going to do. That's not quite what open organizations are seeking to achieve. Democracy, in effect, is control of an organization or group by the majority of its members. We vote, we decide. Meritocracy is slightly different. Meritocracy says that an organization is still governed. There are still the need for decisions to be made. There is still a need for leadership. And I still have a role as the leader. But meritocracy says create an environment where the best idea can win. So to put that in a practical sense, my job as the leader of the Red Hat organization here in this part of the world is to make sure I create the context or a safe environment for people to express themselves, share what they think is a good idea or a way of working that may be different. And as a leader, I must have the ego, or not too much ego, but rather an open ego that says, that's a good idea, it didn't come from me, and allow that idea to be the way we all agree we are going to work. So in a nutshell, democracy is everybody voting on what they want to do. And that's not really workable in an open organization. Mm. It's not about democracy. It's about best ideas winning. And it's that best idea being allowed to succeed. And so with that comes obviously things like transparency. If we're going to make a decision about something, then we need to be clear to all associates, to all employees, why we are doing this. If you can't understand why, then there's something wrong. Then you're not an open organization. I always say that if we end up making a decision and people are surprised in my team about that decision, then I've actually done something wrong.
Mm.
I've not created full transparency about why we may need to do something differently. And maybe I haven't engaged with the team to see whether there might have been a better way to do it. So that's in a nutshell, just a little bit of clarifying the difference. It's certainly not about democracy and just, you know, letting everybody go crazy. It's about harnessing the potential of everybody and giving them a chance to be the one who contributes that next brilliant idea.
Yes, I like that you said harnessing opportunities of everyone, because that's one key thing that companies don't get, because it's not you did not employ them to just come and follow instructions. You employ them to bring in value. Now, speaking of perceptions, I know you raised one now, and it has to do with open organizations being one of chaos. Now, as much as we're saying that open organizations are good and companies, CEOs should keen to it now, I would want to know if there are risk involved. You know, is it so smooth sailing as we're saying? And if they are, how can we handle this risk?
That's a great question, and I loved what you said. You know, first of all, go back to what you said. Why would we hire smart people if we're simply going to tell them exactly what to do, right? Mm-hmm. As a leader, I suppose the right way to think about this is, let me hire smart people and give them the freedom to be smart, to do exactly what their potential is, right?
Exactly.
But you're right. There is sometimes the misconception that an open organization means that there's chaos and that they're just like a free-for-all and the like. And maybe those who are observing open organizations are not entirely wrong, but I'm going to turn it a little bit on its head, because we use the phrase letting sparks fly.
Okay.
Some people might perceive that as chaos. We like to think of it as a little bit of freedom for the sparks to fly. And let me see if I can help you understand what we mean. Because I can imagine looking inwards, you would think it's just chaos. Who the hell's making these decisions, right? One of the things I talk about with my team is the notion of leading with intent. If I have been absolutely clear to my team what good looks like, what are we trying to achieve, and I've explained why, then I can say to my team, you can go off and accomplish your tasks, not necessarily in the way I want you to do it, but in a way that you can actually do it. You're a smart person. I hired you for your capabilities. I need to give you the freedom to accomplish the task in your own way. As long as you understand why you are doing this, you understand what good looks like. And of course, in any organization, there are boundaries, right? So as long as you understand the boundaries of, well, you can't do this, and it may be illegal to do that. So there are some guardrails or boundaries, as we call them. If you understand those boundaries and those guardrails, and you understand the objectives of the organization, then go off and achieve it in any way you feel fit that gets the absolute best result. And of course, at the same time, taps into your skills as an individual, which is, of course, why you are hired. So that might be perceived perhaps as a little bit of chaos, but actually in that freedom rather than chaos, you are giving your people the opportunity to do their best work because they are able to truly tap into their experience and their knowledge to accomplish the task, maybe different to how I would have done it, but still getting there in the end.
Mm. I like that you said that. And I really want our listeners, you know, people who own businesses who are aspiring to, you know, key into this, because we have that challenge a lot in Company City. And I feel like that's why there are so many issues. Now, using Red Hat as an example now, how has, you know, applying this open organization been for you as a company, as for Red Hat as a company? You can even give us a key experience, maybe one experience that you look back and laugh about when, you know, when you started this whole open organization.
You know, I can remember when I joined Red Hat, I was invited to Europe for our annual planning. I think I've been in the company for 30 days. And in the planning session, I was one of the juniors around the room. All the VPs were there. And at some point during the conversation and the planning, a person at my sort of rank, if you like, as a general manager for a region, stood up and publicly challenged the regional VP and explained to him why his thinking was wrong. And then went into great detail in articulating the errors of that, you know, of his thinking. And I was sitting there as a new associate in Red Hat thinking, oh my goodness, this guy's job, you know, his career is over. In some organizations, challenging the boss's boss in front of everybody would literally mean that.
Yes,
you don't dare
true.
Do that, right? Mm-hmm. But the funny part was what happened after that. By the way, a robust discussion happened, and in the end, the VP said, well, okay, I hear you. Let's go and do this instead of that. And that was the end of that. But afterwards, the VP, the boss of the organization came to me and he said, I was watching your face and I could see your expression. And he said to me, what you have witnessed is how open organizations must work. Open organizations must allow freedom for dialogue. They must allow us to be challenged. If he as the leader was not able to be challenged and defend his logic or his thinking, then maybe his idea wasn't actually the best idea.
Yeah.
And so he left me with the challenge to say, go back to South Africa, go back to Africa, and begin to live an open organizational set of values like you have seen. So that was my aha moment when I joined Red Hat for the first time. Mm. But, you know, this is not for everybody. Not all organizations can be. So I think the first thing is you've got to decide it, is this right for you? Does it perhaps represent something that is competitive advantage if you were to change the organizational culture? And then also to realize that, as you can hear from some of the things that are part of the culture, it's going to take courage to change. And that courage will start with leadership having the courage to change.
Mm.
And it's also going to take time for that change, for the trust to build, and for all associates to begin to understand that this is not a superficial thing and that the organization truly wants to change. And there are some ways of doing that that I could share with you if we had the time.
Yes, please.
But there are certainly ways to do this. You know, for example, and these are some of the underpinnings of our organization. We talk about transparency at a leadership level. So that's the first thing, is leadership has to change from do it because I told you, but rather do it through explaining why this is important to the organization. So transparency, invite others into the process. We talk about inclusivity. It's not just me who makes decisions. Rather, actually let everybody make the decisions if you understand the why correctly. So transparency, inclusivity, collaboration, allowing people to co-create, allowing people to be part of the process, and giving them the tools to do it so that they can collaborate in a way that their idea can reach the point of where the decision needs to be mm-hmm. made. We're very big on communities. You don't even have to only tap into your own people. Maybe there's a value network of your distributors or your suppliers who can also potentially contribute to making your organization more open and more competitive. They will see things about you that you often don't see about yourself, and you have to have the courage to ask for that input. So communities can add value. And then you also have to be able to adapt. The notion that we've always done something this way and that's why we'll continue to do it, of course, is just silly, right?
Yes.
We may decide that today we know what to do and we're all clear, but we should always test that and revisit those decisions to make sure they stand the test of time in 3 months, 6 months' time. Was it a good idea? And if not, once again, have the courage to change. So these are just some of the underpinnings that organizations can use as ways to build the sort of building blocks, if you like, for becoming an organization.
Amazing that you mentioned communities because, you know, then again, companies don't see that you also need feedback from committees that you're in. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, like you said, you can't see everything. You need people to point you out in the right direction. This is what you're not doing right. This is what you're doing right. So I like that Red Hat too is working not just with the employees, but also the communities. So it helps them to, you know, grow, expand, and see where they might be lacking that they are not seeing. Now, for Red Hat, how do people, you know, join the family? You know, where do we check you out? Because I do like this idea of open organization, and I do wish that most people would tap into it.
Well, listen, I know the listeners can't see this, but certainly looking at your studio, your walls are painted red, so that's a good step forward.
Yes.
So we are a global software company, and of course, in case you hadn't figured it out, we're an open source company that bases its software development on an open source methodology. Mm. That's in fact where our whole thinking around open organizations come from. It comes from the way in which open source software is developed, using communities to develop, being agile through open ways of thinking and transparency, working across your boundaries of your own organization to solve problems faster. These are all part of the ways in which open source software is developed. And that's how we adapted it to become an organizational philosophy. So we're a software company, a global software company. We operate all across the globe, and we're always on the lookout for good talent. Obviously, being in the software industry, a lot of the good talent we look for is in, you know, areas of cloud technologies, Linux, et cetera, et cetera. But check us out on the internet, www.redhat.com, and keep an eye on LinkedIn, because, of course, we do hire a lot over LinkedIn, and we do have a strategy of over time moving further and further into Africa. So who knows, you know? But yeah, check us out on the web and read a bit more about us there.
All right. Thank you so much, Dion, for coming on the show. I mean, I feel like you need to come back and speak more because there's a whole lot that goes on with open organization that I feel we have not yet scratched. But then let's see how that goes.
I would love it. There is so much more to talk about. So, yeah, I would welcome the opportunity.
All right. That was Dion Havi, Regional GM at Red Hat, Sub-Saharan Africa. More coming your way. Stay tuned.